in the world of sports. She's got next. Next. Here's Jordan Robinson.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of She's Got Next. I'm Jordan Robinson, your host and the number one fan of women's sports. What a weekend. We have so much to cover, and I was running to record this episode because I couldn't wait to talk all about it. Once again, we have an amazing show for you. We've got the latest headlines, the most up-to-date news, and we have a wonderful interview for you later on with an insider and journalist. It's all here. You're in the right place. In case you missed last week's episode, it was one of my favorite conversations. We had Washington Post investigative reporter Albert Samaha on to talk about women's sports fandom and how it's changed recently. We specifically discuss the WNBA and his recent story on the New York Liberty season ticket holders who have felt like newer fans are coming to games, mostly men, who don't really know the decorum of WNBA fandom. Arenas for the WNBA are much more inclusive and positive. There are less drunk people, and you are less likely to hear obscenities yelled at opposing players. But in recent years, with the boom of newer fans being attracted to the WNBA, those season ticket holders, some who have been there since game one in 1997, are being priced out of their seats due to the rise of ticket prices and feel like the overall vibe of the live games have changed. Albert talked through what the price of growth is for a league like the WNBA and how new male fans like himself could ease into the WNBA environment better. I loved this conversation for a multitude of reasons. And then I was so excited and recapped the interview with my husband. And he also made a really great point. He compared it to tennis. There is a specific decorum or rules that you have when watching a live tennis match. You don't talk while the players are serving. You dress nicely. And there are appropriate times when you cheer for your favorite player. Every sport has fandom rules, whether they are written or unwritten. And when you come into those environments, read the room. I feel like that is the moral of the story and the moral of our conversation. Read the room. The WNBA is no different. So it was a fantastic episode, a great conversation. Make sure to go back and listen to that wherever you get your podcasts and read Albert Samaha's work on the Washington Post. All right, moving on. In today's episode of She's Got Next, we are getting into the nitty-gritty of women's track and field. I don't know about you, but headlines from track and field have been all over my timeline recently. Now, quick backstory. My mom is a huge track and field fan. Like I've said, I grew up in Sacramento, and our city was a majority stop in the Olympic trials and major track meets throughout the track season back then. We would sit out there for hours on end for my mom to root for her favorite athletes. I remember one year standing in the longest line imaginable to get a signed autograph from Marion Jones. And it is one of my mom's prized possessions. Like, she's a fangirly, for real. She knew them all by name. She probably had been following them since college. My brother ran track in high school. So essentially, so much of my youth was at track meets. It's in our blood. And of course, when the Olympics roll around, again, I don't know about you, but track and field is one of my favorite events to tune into. This track season, though, following the Paris Olympics of 2024, feels bigger. For so long, you really only heard about women's track and field athletes during Olympic years or during Olympic trials. Not anymore. These ladies are fast and breaking records throughout the track season with their eye on getting another world championship medal, which takes place in September in Tokyo this year. Just this past weekend at Diamond League Monaco, It brought out all the stars. Olympic gold medalist Julian Alfred won the 100 meters in 10.79 seconds. Femke Bol from the Netherlands crushed the 400 meter hurdles with a time of 51.95, just to name a few. With our guests later on in the show, we're going to dive into this track season specifically and who you should keep your eye on, while also giving flowers to greats like Shelly-Ann Fraser-Pryce as she takes her last lap before she retires. We also discuss the growth of women's track and field and how more paid, yes, paid opportunities have sprouted to be a professional track athlete. Competing in an individual sport has its pros and cons, for sure. I know we covered that in a previous episode talking about golf. A lot of these athletes have to pay their own way and only get compensated if they place or win, especially if they're not sponsored by some of the big ones like Nike, Adidas, Puma. That's all changing. We've talked about it on the show before, but Reddit founder Alexis Ohanian, and he's Serena Williams' husband, has made a major commitment to boost and invest in women's sports. He's created his own women's track league that will officially start in 2026 called Athlos, where we'll get to see the likes of Gabby Thomas, Sha'Carri Richardson, Tara Davis-Woodall compete for more prize money than ever received before. Those athletes I just mentioned are also co-founders, so they'll get a piece of that investment pie too. Things are changing for the better in the world of women's track and field, and I'm so here for it. It's about time. Stick around a little bit later as we further this conversation on what's to come in the track season, what to look out for in women's track and field, and some of the other changes that maybe need to happen still. It always talks about it in women's sports. There's been so much growth, but there is so much more room to grow. So we're going to talk about all that. But before we get to our guests, let's get to a Women's Sports Week recap, because what a week in women's sports it was. Wimbledon wrapped up this past weekend with Iga Swiatek taking a commanding victory over American Amanda Anisimova in straight sets, 6-0 and 6-0. The match was only 57 minutes long. I tuned in a little late because on the West Coast, tennis comes on very, very early. So I tuned in a little late and it was almost over. It was incredible to watch Swiatek's dominance. She now has a Wimbledon title to add to her 2022 US Open win and the four she has claimed at Roland Garros. She is only the eighth woman in the Open era to win Grand Slam single titles on all three surfaces. And again, she is not world number one. She is top 10, but really proved that she can be atop this women's tennis world and women's tennis conversation. It was awesome. And real quick, on Amanda Anisimova, what a run. An incredible, historic run for her. She was ranked number 14, made it all the way to the final, upsetting the world number one, Sabalenka, on the way. She has so much to be proud of. I know it was really hard to watch just as a competitor, not showing up your best on the world's biggest stage and in this type of event and environment and a final. And Wimbledon, of all things, she was crying. She was really heartbroken. And I know she's going to rebuild from that because, again, she played some really great tennis over these past couple weeks. So, again, so much to be proud of. Next up, did you catch the all-women boxing card on Netflix put on by Jake Paul? That was awesome. It was so fun to watch. It featured 21 world titles and 5 championships on the line. And it was on one of the biggest boxing stages there is, Madison Square Garden. Let's go through it because I watched it all. My husband, huge boxing fan, and I was really into it. It was great. Great showing and really entertaining. Alicia the Bomb Baumgartner defended her undisputed super featherweight crown against Spain's Jennifer Miranda, but That was a great fight. And it was really, really close. I think Baumgartner thought she was going to have this in the bag, have it handled. But Jennifer Miranda came to fight. It was really good. But the main event, Katie Taylor versus Amanda Serrano, lived up to the hype. This was the third meeting between these two. And Taylor got a clean sweep, winning Friday's fight by a majority decision. Serrano had the crowd on her side, though, as she's from New York and is the first Puerto Rican to become undisputed male or female. So it was, I mean, she brought out the New York Knicks dancers. It was a whole spectacle. But Katie Taylor definitely got the better of her. It was also really close. They also put down any ideas or thoughts of it being another fight. This was their last fight between them. Three fights is pretty good. They don't want to go for a fourth. Over 6 million people tuned in, and it made $2.63 million at the gate alone, a record for a women-only card. It was reported that both Serrano and Taylor earned $9 million each for the fight and an $18 million prize pool. This represents the biggest payday in women's boxing history, surpassing their previous rematch purse of $14 million. So I know Serrano, I believe she was on the Breakfast Club radio show. She talked about how she got paid $4,000 for her last fight. Like, she thanks Jake Paul and everything that this spectacle was, because it was putting women's boxing on the map. And this is only the beginning. Also, for the first time in 7 years, the women of the WWE took center stage and delivered this past week. Evolution took place as WWE held the event dedicated to its stacked women's division. Someone added me on X, said that they loved the show and wanted me to make sure I shouted this event out on the show this week. Shout out to those women athletes, because I know that is not easy to do. Lastly, as we wrap this up, the WNBA All-Star is in Indianapolis, happening over the weekend, July 18th and 19th. It's going to have a three-point competition, a skills competition, and the WNBA All-Star game, with the biggest and brightest stars competing for bragging rights. I'll be there, and we'll have an awesome recap for you guys next episode. All right, I hope you feel caught up and primed for a great conversation coming up next. We're going to hear from Flow Sports host and writer Nia Gibson. This is She's Got Next with Jordan Robinson.
From Odyssey Sports, it's She's Got Next with Jordan Robinson.
Today's guest is Nia Gibson, journalist and on-camera host for Flow Track. Nia, welcome to She's Got Next.
Hey, Jordan. Thanks for having me.
I am so excited to have you here so that we can finally do a deep dive in the world of women's track with you. We called on an expert, and that's why you are here. So this is going to be fun. I already know.
Yeah, no, it's going to be really fun. I think girls rule the world, period. But I think especially when we talk about track and field, women are so dominant. And there's just so much to talk about. You might have to contain me a little, because I am a yapper by nature. And then now we're adding track and field into it. So just fair warning.
It's fine. I introduce this show every single time that I am a yapper on all things women's sports. So we call on other yappers to yap about their favorite thing. That's what we do. That's my favorite part. But I wanted to talk about women's track and field, because I feel like, you know, I think I grew up watching track and field. My mom is a diehard track and field fan. We would sit out there for hours. My brother ran track. But this year in particular, post-Paris Olympics, it feels like women's track and field is all over my timeline, all of the momentum going into this track season. And I feel like that's been a theme for all women's sports these past couple years, but specifically women's track. Do you feel like this is the same for you too?
For sure. And I think track is so special because women can be so expressive in it. You, like, I know a lot of people, they're sponsored by either Adidas or Nike, so they're they have their kits on, but aside from that, they know how to really express themselves and exude that, like, their personality with it. Like, we all know, like, Tara Davis Woodall, she's known for, like, after she's done long jumping, she'll have her cowboy boots on, her cowgirl boots on, rather, her cowgirl hat. We know Sha'Carri loves her nails. There's a shot put her name, Chase Jackson. She has, like, this super expressive eye makeup. It's different every time she throws. So all around track and field. So track and field, definitely want to emphasize that. The women are just ruling it and they're killing it.
I love that. And I feel like these headlines and the big names, I think outside of Olympic years, sometimes it's hard to always talk about them or have their headlines in the news. So what have you seen just from a media standpoint, just making sure the stories and everyone is constantly talking about track and field, because it's an Olympic sport and one of my favorite Olympic sports, but they run all year round and all the time.
I think one of the most important stories we're going to talk about women's track and field at this point in time is probably Faith Kipyegon's attempt to break for the four minute barrier in the mile. It's something that a lot of people think that a woman is not capable of doing. She was able to lower her own world record by a second. So she ran 4:06. So yes, while she didn't break the 4 minute barrier, she said something that really resonated with me that I think can resonate with a lot of women, especially Black women, is like just daring to dream, daring to want to do it in front of this crowd where they're not, a lot of people are just not on your side, but you're going to do it anyway. And there's so many barriers. Like when you really think about women in the mile in particular, like the threshold in which like we've grown. In 1960, the world record was 4:37. Now we have high school girls running way past that. I was at New Balance Nationals a couple of weeks ago, and the winner ran 4:33, and she's a junior in high school. She was a Union Catholic in Jersey. So that once upon a time for that, she would have broke the world record. And 1960 is not that long ago. So just the progression in which women are doing, I'm telling you, we rock. We are so strong. We are so fast. We are so capable. And I think we prove that every day. And if we're going to talk about track in particular, that's like, I think one of the biggest storylines, because Faith, she crossed the line. She said, if it's not going to be me, it's going to be somebody. And I wholeheartedly believe that with the way that the sport is growing, technology is growing, things are happening. And what was nice about that moment, it almost brought tears to my eyes, was the support she got. There was a ton of pacers around her, men and women, just wanting her to do her best and succeed. She had the backing of Nike. And that to me was like something that was foreign. Usually when we dare to dream, we're by ourselves. We have our small village, which don't get me wrong, they'll do what they need to do. But the fact that she had her village, but then also had the backing of a huge brand to make sure that she accomplished this goal, or at the very least had the tools that was needed and required to get close to it, was amazing. And I mean, that's just probably the major one right now. So I think between that, I think Athlos is a big thing that I think people need to keep their eye on. It was the last year was the first time they threw the meet, but now they're deciding they're going to have a meet again, obviously this year, but they're making it into a whole league now. And it's going to be a team-based league, and they added field events to it. And it's going to be something that's headlined by like your Gabby Thomases, your Sha'Carri Richardson, Tara Davis Woodall, like I mentioned. I'm sure you're going to have the return of some participants from last year, Masai Russell, Natoya Gold-Toppin of Jamaica, Alexis Holmes. Like it's everywhere. And they're going to have multiple meets starting in 2026. We still don't know the details of like how the team-based dynamic is going to be of it, but it's going to be interesting because track is an individual sport. So, but Athlos is going to be an all women's track and field league, and it's going to be fun and probably competing with your other leagues out there, like such as like your Grand Slam tracks and Diamond Leagues. And it's going, I think it's going to be the shift that we need in this sport, because a shift is needed. So,
yeah. Well, let's talk about that, because the thing with Athlos that is so prominent and making a lot of headlines is the money. Like there is money involved, and there isn't always money involved when it comes to professional track and field, especially for women's athletes. So just talk about that part a little bit and how that's kind of breaking barriers in track and field.
Yeah, it's kind of like it's about damn time. I'm so happy that it's happening, because let's be real. I think it's always been super wrong that they were getting paid the way they were getting paid. But these are human beings. And at this point, even men and women who are breaking world records, national records, doing things with their bodies that someone couldn't even think about doing. And some of them have to also, here's the harsh reality of it. A lot of them are not sponsored. And in track, when you don't have a deal or a shoe deal of some sort, there's that reality where you're training at a world-class level, but then now you also got to go clock in to wherever it is after. Like, that's a very hard reality after being maybe a star athlete your entire life and then going through college and probably getting promised these things. And especially in USA where the talent pool is so deep. So I'm so happy that they may have to rely less on those shoe deals that aren't guaranteed and just compete in these meets and do what they do best and make a living for themselves. So it is about time, because I think, you know, there's no, prior to like Athlos and Grand Slam, there's not like USATF is not a league. So there's no like players association that can like advocate for these runners to be like, hey, we need more money. Hey, we need protection here. Hey, if this woman gets pregnant, then what? Because we all know how those go. Like, we can talk about Allyson Felix if we want to, you know? She has done everything for Nike, make these U.S. teams and world champion, Olympic champion. She gets pregnant and they want to cut her salary by 70%. That's crazy. She held up her end of the bargain and then some. So I think, like, along with the money that is coming with the growth of the sport, I think the protection for women is so necessary, because it can't be the thing where only men are allowed to live their lives, have families, and they'll be fine. Like, we should be able to live our lives, have family, and be fine too, because we've also proven that we can have families and still succeed. Look at Shelly Ann Fraser-Pryce. She's still running at a super top level to the point she wants it to be known, I'm a mom. Like, so people called her Pocky Rocket because of her small stature and the way she gets out the blocks. But now she likes to go by Mommy Rocket because I'm also a mom. Like, you know, that's a part of my identity. And it used to be so taboo and so hush because you hear you're a mom and then they ax your contract. It was something, the same thing that happened with Christina Clemens. She is a world-class hurdler. I think she's attempting to make another team later this month. She was sponsored by Adidas. When she was pregnant, during her pregnancy, Adidas basically dropped her because the assumption is you're pregnant. I don't know how much use we will have for you after, like postpartum. Like, I don't know how you will be running. It's a big question mark. It's a big what if. But I think these women have shown their capabilities even after that. Faith Kipyegon is another example. As a matter of fact, she broke her own world record last week in the 1500 meters at the Prefontaine Classic. She's a mom, and she has broken her. She's broken her world record a few times or a couple times post baby. So, yeah, it's very clear that there's people at the top that don't need to be at the top. There's probably like a lack of diversity, obviously. And I'm just happy that these leagues are coming into place right now because they're identifying maybe this is the norm. It doesn't make the norm right. So the sport is growing. Athlos is great for us. It's great for the women because, again, women rock, and I think they dominate track and field.
So well said. And it's something that, you know, pregnancy and this idea of needing to bounce back and so fast in women's sports is a whole topic that I think we could spend hours diving into and giving so many countless examples from all different sports where it is this unrealistic expectation that you have to bounce back, but then knowing that women are superhuman and can bounce back and beat world records when they come back from pregnancy, but having a league that is women-led, or like an Allyson Felix who has a company and is a leader in this, and having the conversations saying, I'm a mom and that doesn't mean my athletic career is over. Maybe it looks different, but you're not going to treat me differently because I am still a professional athlete. And if I want to come back and I want to be at the top of my sport, then I can. And there's a lack of conversations. And when it is an individual sport like track and field, it doesn't feel like there's a lot of, like you said, no players association. There's no kind of rules. It's these unspoken rules that sometimes get people in trouble because it's this veil of expectation, right?
It's hard. It is so hard. Like, I wish there was like some sort of players association or something of that sort to help advocate for them, because even when they get certain deals, it's very hush hush. Nobody knows how much money anyone's making, like in the NBA and the NFL, where we know this rookie contract means this or whatever. So people are getting lowballed left, right, and center, even if they are represented by these big companies. It's hard. It's difficult. And then even for those who will, you know, keep an athlete that may have a child, whoever's on top may decide they want to be purposely dense. And they're like, we're going to expect you to come back at this time. No recovery, none of that. And be like, well, you said you wanted to be treated like this. You said you wanted to stay. So here's our expectation. Unrealistic expectation. Goalposts are moving. You can't give more time for a hamstring injury than you do for a woman who just delivered a child, you know? So again, it's definitely hard. It's definitely difficult. And I think Athlos turning into a league and a team-based league at that is going to really help with that, because a shift is needed.
It's about time. Like you said, it is about time. We need the shift. Oh, I am. That just makes me even more excited for this new league, because I think I was focused on the money and it being women led, but there's this whole other door that can be opened for this type of league. So that makes me really excited. But you said that that's starting in 2026. So for this track season, for some newbies out there, can you kind of explain where we are in the track season now that it's kind of mid-July, and how what we're going through and what we're watching right now is all leading to the World Championships?
Yes. Where are we right now? So let's say on the drama end of stuff, obviously Grand Slam track just concluded its inaugural season. One less meet than anticipated. But what I will say is that it really did change the scope of the season for a lot of athletes. So its main competitor was Diamond League, and Diamond League's been around for about the last 15 years and has been the forefront of just elite athletics. But Diamond League, they're kind of known to underpay athletes. But I mean, I think they always hit the mark well in terms of where they have it, the venues they have it. They only have one meet in the United States. But outside the United States, track and field is big, it's exorbitant. And what Michael Johnson was trying to do with Grand Slam track is have that same field, but in the States. So obviously you could tell there's going to be a bit of a learning curve. There's probably going to be people who's hating on it for that reason, but also for the amount of money he's shelling out with it. And I'll admit, I think he probably got a bit overzealous with that and may have probably ran into some financial issues within that. But we do believe that they're coming back for a 2026 season, but I think from there, Grand Slam track helped to produce certain things where I think now athletes will start to demand certain money. I think they're really starting to see what their worth is. And at these meets, you've seen multiple world leads, facility records. Masai Russell ran the American record in the Miami meet, going 12:17 over the 100 meter hurdles. There's been a lot of things that's been happening. And I think they really make it where you guys are of the celebrity status, so we're going to treat you as such. They would fly their racers out first class. They would have like this thing called drip check that was very similar to like an NBA tunnel walk, where they're taking pictures of their outfits, really big press conferences, and treating them as such. And I think people are taking that momentum into their national trials to get into world championships. I think they also created storylines for certain stars. I know this is a women's show, but just like for reference, so like there's like your Ja'Cory Pattersons and Dylan Beards, two of them, for example. So Ja'Cory he's a world-class athlete, but he was working at UPS, unsigned, loading boxes. So he would load boxes overnight, sleep for a little bit, go to practice 8 a.m., sleep for the rest of the day, and then repeat. And oh my God. He had a breakout race launched him into superstar. I'm like, track and field world fell in love with his story. A few months later, he ends up getting signed by Nike because he was on their radar. It became marketable. And that happened via Grand Slam. So a lot of people's stories came about. Tia Jones, for example, she was one of the first challengers to kind of like upset the field. She ran an amazing race in Kingston and then got on a ton of people's radar. And it's just one of those things where they created storylines for people, and stories sell. And I think that's where track and field would usually miss the mark with a lot of these athletes that just weren't your top dogs, because there's so many dogs in the sport. But sometimes I think we do a poor job in highlighting all of that. So there's Grand Slam. So now there's a lot more eyes on like your other meet. So USA Trials is coming up the end of this month. People are going to try to qualify for the team. It's going to be super competitive. Top three makes it to the world team. So it's going to be hard, because I can name you probably six American women who are worthy of being on that team and potentially placing in that final, but only three can go. I mean, you have a relay pool. Usually top six can get into that relay pool, or depending on what USATF decides, but it's tough. So like from the 100 up onto the 5,000 meters, only three can go. Now, so Ja'Cory has a bye. So because she is the reigning world champion, she doesn't have to like re-qualify. She gets an automatic bid into this world championship. So USA gets the privilege of being able to send four. So she doesn't have to run this one if she wants to. Maybe she can run if she wants to reps, because she is a bit under-raced at the moment. But yeah, they can send four this year because of Sha'Carri's bid. But yeah, top three gets to go. And that goes for any country. So Jamaica had theirs in June. It's a little earlier than normal. So they already know what their team is looking like. And same with the other nations. So a lot of things are about to shake up in the next couple of months as we gear up for World Championships in September, which is also a lot later than our normal championship. Usually it happens in August. Like Olympics was in August. The World Championship before that was in August. And that's also why Athos is so late, because it's after. So Athos is in October. So like you see the connective tissues, like everything just like is making sense.
Got it.
So yeah, that's where we're at. You're going to see people running a lot of miscellaneous meets leading up to nationals just to get themselves a little sharper. So it's a lot of moving parts right now. We're at the peak of the season. Diamond League's at the peak. This weekend, you have like this meet in Memphis where Sydney McLaughlin-Leroni is going to attempt to break the American record in the 400. And then you also have a stacked field in Monaco. So two sides of the world doing something great all along. And yeah, a lot of good things are happening. A lot of exciting things are happening. Track's popping right now.
It really is. I mean, yeah. I got dizzy just trying to think of your schedule throughout all of this, but I can't imagine. But what I do have a question just out of curiosity. So when you have these other leagues or like a Diamond League or like Michael Johnson's league, how do those help you qualify for the World Championships, or these are just for the storylines to help get you sharper? Because it all leads to the trials, because that's right. What really counts.
Yeah, the trials is what really counts, but it helps you get sharper. Like, and there's people who like to do maybe like the Sydney approach where I train, you see me in a couple of meets, and then I just bang it out in US trials. But then there's people who need to kind of race into shape, because there's also no, I don't think there's any training that can prepare you for a race the way a race can prepare you for a race. So you just like do your first race, get the baseline, see what you need to tweak in the lab, come back, try again, repeat, rinse and repeat. So yeah, all of those just, not that they don't mean anything, they definitely mean something, but they definitely, yeah, help you race into shape, help build the storylines, help them get money.
Yes.
Yeah.
We want that.
Yes.
Okay. That helps. That totally helps put it all in perspective. But yes, it seems like it is about to be popping off as we get closer towards the end of the year. But you mentioned Shelly-Ann Fraser-Pryce, and this is such a great story because, you know, we saw her at Paris, but then we didn't get to see her compete in the finals. And then just fans of her and her legacy and what she's done for track and field, we just felt like that was it. Like, we want more like that. We're not done yet watching you compete with your hair. We need to guess the next color, all of these things that are happening. But then she said, no, we're going to do a victory lap. We're going to go one more time and kind of do this season. So I wanted to ask, how has it been to see her kind of get these flowers on this victory lap, and how has she been competing? Because I know she wants just to go out on a high note.
It's been bittersweet from a fan perspective. I think it's so sweet to see her doing so well, and also see her have the privilege of ending it on her terms. A lot of athletes don't get that. But then there's also the, oh my God, what are we going to do without Mommy Rocket? Oh my goodness. Because her story, when you look at the origins of it, it kind of was out of nowhere in 2008. At the time, Jamaica's princess was Veronica Campbell Brown. And honestly, they were upset. So when Shelly made the team, Veronica Campbell did not for the 100. And the people of Jamaica were upset. They were like, can we do something where like we switched them out? Because Veronica was their princess. And then later on that year, Shelly went on to lead the Jamaica sweep in the women's 100. And it was all hail Shelly. And from there, like, she kind of blocked out the noise, obviously embraced Jamaica, because I know my people, like, my family's Jamaican. I know how it goes. And I wasn't surprised that was how it was for real. But seeing that happen, this feels like a full circle moment, how her career popped off in Asia and now will end in Asia. Because, you know, Beijing Olympics in 2008, and then now Tokyo World Championships. And it's amazing to see. I think she's transcended the sport again, for her coming back and still being dominant post-pregnancy and embracing motherhood. And to your point, Jordan, talking about how I'm still dominant, it just looks a little different now. Yeah, she's just amazing. And I think there's a lot of people following behind her that just, they wouldn't be here. Like Shelly walked, so whoever's coming up can run, like including like the Clayton twins, for example. So yeah, seeing Shelly run, I'm excited to see what happens. I'm excited to see her in her war ready hair in Tokyo. I'm hoping that she's going to do something crazy. She did something crazy for trials. It was like this really pretty blonde and pink. But then for semifinals and finals, she ended up just doing a twist out. So, you know, she's full of surprises.
On the track and with her hairdos.
She is full of surprises. So, like, she's always fun to watch. She's a regular winner of the parent race for her at her son's school. And well, just I'm just excited to see what she does in Tokyo in her individual 100 and also on that 4x1 for Jamaica.
And it feels like I can already anticipate for those world championships, it's going to not only feel like a celebration for her, but also how lucky are we to be able to see this iteration of Jamaica and USA sprinters kind of going at it one last time. I'm getting goosebumps just thinking about it, but I can already feel that that's what it's going to be.
I have goosebumps talking about it, and she's still competitive. It's not one of those things where we're just like, we're liking her because we're supposed to like her. You can never count her out. Like so far, her season's best is 10.91. Running sub 11 in the 100 as a woman is already difficult enough, but the way that she's been trending upwards this season, it's like she's still dominant. She's still top of the game. She's still one of the best in the world. So, and she always comes correct. She's never going to come somewhere unprepared, and she's never going to set herself up to not do the best of her ability. So, oh gosh, I'm so excited.
I know. Okay, the countdown is officially on for that. I know that that is going to be so amazing. Okay, one other thing that I wanted to pick your brain about is you mentioned Sydney McLaughlin-Levrone, and she is killing it. She's so, so good at her craft. But then we see in the NCAA track and field championships that her college record was broken from 2018 when she was at the University of Kentucky by Michigan, Savannah Sutherland. And I think that just gets excited about the future and what college track and field is looking like these days. So when you look at some of the college athletes, the top ones, but maybe before they go pros or before they go into the Olympics, what gets you excited about the future of track and field?
Oh, I don't know if you heard about the term that everyone in track's using, but it's like trackflation that they're saying and they're using. Yeah,
I like that. Trackflation. Yes.
So it's like basically it's like these times that they're running right now are so competitive. Like you keep talking about high schoolers right now. They are killing it right now. They're killing it. Like there's boys out there who's running sub 10 legal and it's insane. You're able to compete with the pros. But I guess bringing it back to NCAA, it's so scary how crazy the talent pool right now is. I think someone that comes to my mind immediately is Jamecia Ford of South Carolina. She ran a sub 22 in her 200 in the semifinals. She ran 10.87 in her semifinals for the 100. And I believe, I mean, it'd be crazy if she wasn't at US Trials. I'm pretty sure she's going to be competing at US Trials. But the fact that that sophomore is competitive enough to compete with the big dogs and potentially make a team is ridiculous. I believe last year she competed at US Trials, but in the 400. She was actually recruited at South Carolina for the 400 and is dominating in the 1 and 2 right now. But yeah, I think she came 5th overall in the final. But yeah, like, I mean, so you talk about the NCAA and the talent that's going on right now. It's crazy. The trackflation is real. Savannah Sutherland, I think she will be in Tokyo. I think she represents Canada. So, yeah. And was that a Canadian record? I'll have to double check. But it definitely was an NCAA record. And it just goes to show what we are in for. I think it is a tough time to be a 400-meter hurdler right now with Sydney McLaughlin-Levrone in the pool because the race is primarily for second place. But I think the future is so bright. I think the NCAA is definitely the precursor to know what's next for USA or Canada or Jamaica or whatever country that athlete may represent. And the level of competition at times, sometimes it's higher than those at pro meets. The nationals this year was scary good.
I get excited about the future. And I think it's the same. We talk about, you know, college basketball all the time and how that just that excitement and the just people knowing your name will carry you through your pro career and kind of bridge that gap into cheering you on. Even at the next Olympics, you're like, oh, yeah, the NCAA championships. So that's super, super exciting. And I'm excited about the future of track. Before I let you go, I'm just curious. This is me just being nosy because I know you have been traveling all over because of track and field this season. What's been your favorite place? What is the all-time favorite track venue for you?
And this might, I might be biased, but I think my favorite meet that I've covered so far was Grand Slam track in Kingston, Jamaica. They redid the track at National Stadium this year. It is spongy. It is bouncy. It is fast. When you see people like, again, Natoya Gultoppin opened up her season there, ran 158. Sabel Eid Nasser, who came second place in Paris, she opened up the 48 point. That's just not a time you open up with on a normal day. And I credit it to the spirit of Jamaica and the new track they laid down in the foundation in National Stadium. It's the sprint capital of the world. So why wouldn't some of the sprinters do what they do best? That's where we saw Tia Jones kind of break out. That's where we saw, like, we seen it all. As we see, like, Danielle Williams, she was, like, the first challenger to, like, win a group. And I think it's just because of the spirit of Jamaica and the new track. So that one was really fun. It was my favorite so far. But if we revisit this conversation in a couple months, it may change. I'm supposed to be going to Switzerland next month for the Diamond League final. So,
Okay. So you're like, I got some more coming up that may change.
Maybe Tokyo. So we'll see. We'll revisit this.
That's so exciting. Have fun covering this. I love how you just, your whole face lights up when you talk about track and field. So thank you for sharing your wisdom. Nia Gibson, journalist, on-camera host for Flow Track. Thank you so much for joining the show.
Thanks for having me. I had so much fun.
That was fun. We're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we're going to dive into the business side of women's sports. You're listening to She's Got Next with Jordan Robinson.
Let's get down to business. Here's what's happening in the business of women's sports.
Welcome back to She's Got Next. Now it's time for Let's Get Down to Business, where we talk about the business of women's sports. The one thing I wanted to highlight on the business side this week is Angel Reese being the newest cover star for NBA 2K2026. And she launched her signature shoe with Reebok on the cover. Talk about boss moves. She dropped the news on the same day. She unveiled the shoe. It's not going to be available for purchase until 2026. No official date is set yet. But, I mean, what a way to make a splashy announcement. I love this for her. Quick history lesson, though. Angel Reese is the sixth WNBA player to be on the cover of NBA 2K. Candace Parker was the first in 2022. Sue Bird, Diana Taurasi, Sabrina Ionescu, Asia Wilson, and now Angel Reese. And she also debuted her signature shoe on the cover, Like a Boss, like I mentioned. Also, they're super shiny, sparkly. I love them. Can't wait to buy them. She's not the first WNBA player to have a signature shoe either. She's not even the first with Reebok, actually. There is some confusion with signature shoes and PEs, but just want to give you a real quick history lesson of some of the WNBA ballers who have had their own shoe. Cheryl Swoops was the very first women's basketball player to have a signature shoe with Nike in 1995 with the Air Swoops. She released six iterations until 2002. Iconic. Then Reebok had the Lobo in 1997. Fresh off the Olympic gold medal, Rebecca Lobo got her very own shoe. She was drafted by the New York Liberty. They got him in New York Knicks orange and blue colorways. It was awesome. 1999, Fila had the Nike Delta after Olympian Nikki McCray. Then it wouldn't be until 2010 that Candace Parker got her very own shoe. The Commander was released in 2010. 10 for Adidas. Then the Air Deladon with Nike in 2022 from Elena Deladon. Breanna Stewart with Puma in 2022 as well. Sabrina Ionescu with one of the most popular basketball shoes, men or women, debuted in 2023 with Nike. And of course, recently, the A1s with Asia Wilson in 2025. I just have to shout out that women athletes and women's basketball players are marketable. People want to buy their shoes. They want to play like these athletes. I love it. More signature shoes, more money for women's athlete. Shout out to Angel Reese. This is super, super exciting. All right, that'll do it for us. Thanks so much for tuning in to this week at She's Got Next with Jordan Robinson. See you next time.